Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own.
Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 351 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode is sponsored by Best Fiends. Stay tuned. We will have a little word from them a little bit later on. And this episode, we'd especially like to thank our very special co-producer, Linda B. She is our, was that like almost Irish? Or pirate. She is our Patreon supporter of the week, our co-producer. Thank you so much, Linda B. And stay tuned for the very end where we will talk about what that is and how you can find out more.
So did any of you get a chance to watch the Outlander Summer, whatever that thing is that they're doing now, last week? They did name it for me. But they also featured one of our favorite people,
aww,
Teresa.
Yes.
Our Outlander kitchen buddy. And I was so mad because I was watching that, her make fish and chips and talking to Lauren Lyle and Ian. What is his name? Ian. I'm calling him Ian because I can't recall his name.
John Bell. Oh, sorry. John Bell.
Thank you. John Bell. I couldn't hear you.
I'm making out with my cat. And so I'm like, you can't hear. Oh, that's right. No, I'm not talking into the mic. Sorry.
John Bell. And all I kept thinking is, oh my God, that looks so good. I really want to make fish and chips. But to those who don't know, I don't have a usable right hand right now. So even if I wanted to make the fish and chips, I could not make the fish and chips. There was far too much knife work. So I basically need Teresa to fly down from her little island, her little Pender Island, and come make me fish and chips.
So my latest, and not necessarily greatest, although the bright side is that I'm very thankful I'm able to afford her care, so that makes me happy. But my Summer, I think Summer already knows this, but I don't know if she's had a, like, given me her reaction to it. Maybe you have and I've forgotten. So you know my kitties, they're my babies. I mean, anyone who's listened knows this. And one was really sick last year. Thank goodness she's better. Anyway, so I haven't talked about like what their conditions are and everything. They both have chronic conditions, and now one has gone from two chronic conditions to three. And
what's
the
new?
You didn't know? I didn't tell you? I talked about it on, well, you've seen my posts.
We aren't that kind of friends.
Exactly. You're my Schwester. You better read my crap. Anyway, no, my monkey bee, as I call her, my youngest kitty, has feline asthma.
What the? Oh, my God. How is that a thing?
Any mammal, probably any creature that breathes could probably have asthma. So anyway, it's a thing, and something that I thought she was like, not recently, but like maybe over the last six to 12 months.
What are the
I thought
symptoms?
She was trying to cough up a hairball, but it just was not productive. I thought, oh, well, she's trying to cough up a hairball. But if you notice when they cough up, you know, I'm not going to make the noise, but we know what the sound is when they're vomiting or doing a hairball, right? We know that noise. So it wasn't quite like that, but it was, her body position was similar. And so that's why I thought it. So anyway, I've never been able to get it on camera. Not that I do those kind of things, but this, because it's usually
the feeling you got it on camera.
It's in the middle of the night or early in the morning. And I'm like, I'm not aware enough, or I'm not near her close enough to get it done. And by the time I go over, she stops.
It's done, yeah.
So this time I saw it, and rather than try and console her, because, you know, what are you going to do? How do you console someone with an asthma attack?
You
can't.
Know what I do? Because I don't ever think it's an asthma attack. I think it's vomiting. And I'm like, get off of the hardwood. Get off of the carpet. Get on the linoleum.
Oh, I hear you. And my cats are usually pretty good about not doing it on carpet, but it still happens. Anyway,
no.
So it's not productive. So I'm meaning like nothing's coming up. And so I'm like, okay, this is not right. So I noticed in July and August, it was kind of this thing, whatever it was happening more frequently, like maybe like from once a month, if that, to like two or three or four times a month. And it would last like, I don't know, from like maybe one little cough to like a 30-second like coughing fit, or what the equivalent of a coughing fit for a cat, but kind of wheezing, and she sounds congested. But then once everything kind of quote unquote clears up, there's no more congestion. Funny that. Anyway, so I finally got on, we're on a wellness plan with our vet. And part of that package is you get 24/7 access to a vet chat. So I chatted with the vet, and this is during business hours. This was not like overnight or anything. So I said what I saw, described it. And then I said, I have a video. She's like, could you send it? I was like, really? Okay. So I emailed it to them, and she said, okay, so this looks like, so this kind of coughing, it looks like coughing. So that's when you say your cat is coughing, I'm pretty sure your cat was not coughing. Cats don't typically cough. They can cough, but when they do a lot, it's not because they even have an upper respiratory tract infection. That's just not in there. It's not typical. What they will have that looks like coughing is when they have asthma. So anyway, this vet looks at it and says, okay, so has she ever been, you know, seen for this and this? And I'm like, nope. She's like, okay, so my two concerns are feline asthma and heart condition. Has she ever had a chest x-ray? And I'm like about to like fall off my chair going, what? So here I am thinking, oh my God, my baby's got a heart problem. So who knows? She may. We don't know. We are treating it as at this point though. And then we finally got a chance to talk to my regular vet, her regular vet. I was able to email the video to her. She looked at it and said, okay, one of her cats has asthma. So she knows what it looks like. And she's seen the video multiple times. She's like, this is asthma. I was like, are you sure you don't want to rule out a heart condition? She's like, well, this looks like asthma. I'm like, okay. So we're treating it as asthma. I had to go to a human pharmacy to get some pills. So it's treated with two things. A bronchodilator, which, you know, expands your blood vessels, right? Mm-hmm. And then, I'm sorry, not your blood vessels, maybe that too. It's not a vasodilator. It's a bronchodilator. So it expands your breathing passages. And then the other one is a steroid, a glucocorticoid. I may pronounce that wrong, but something like that. But it's a form of steroid that helps bring down inflammation. So you're bringing down inflammation while maximizing space for air to breathe.
I feel like this section needs to be called like Claire's Corner when we talk about medical conditions, because...
Oh, Lord.
I personally am almost tuning out, but I know people love this stuff. So I'm not saying stop. I'm just saying maybe we need to have a Claire's Corner where we talk about medical conditions
the reason
for a while.
I'm happy to talk about medical conditions as they come up, but especially
it's like Claire's Cabinet, only it's not ice cream.
How about Adso's Corner? Claire's Adso's Corner. I know it's Claire, but it's also a cat. So basically, we got the pill, and then I'm like, okay. And of course, you know, I read like all these research studies about this stuff and treatment, and everything said over and over, it's two pronged. And the vet only gave us the pills, and I'm like, what about the other prong? She said, oh, well, she did mention it, but she goes, it's normally treated with this and this. We're going to start on this because it's a lot cheaper, and it's really, you know, you can start it overnight, basically, right? The next day, as soon as you get the pills, you can start it. So after
Claire's
a few
kitten corner,
there you go. After a few days, I bugged her, quote unquote, bugged her. I emailed her again and I said, hey, I was still interested
in
this.
I'm waiting for the second prong.
Exact. Thank you. See, you are listening. Do not lie. So I'm waiting for the second prong
because it sounded sexual. Go ahead.
Oh, Lord.
Going.
So I'm like, where's the prong? Where's the second prong, bitch? No, I'm just kidding.
This is the worst threesome ever.
Summer.
Where's the second prong?
So she said, and she's like, oh, okay. If you would like, I'm like, no, I don't like. Why am I asking if I don't like? Mm-hmm. So she's like, okay, so just so you know, you can get it from a pharmacy, and you go to a human pharmacy, and it is, it's $300. And I was like, oh, okay. And she's like, but if you use this and you have to go to a human pharmacy, but you can go to goodrx.com, you know, get a coupon code and it'll save you money. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, what's that Martin Sheen app that's got like all the cheap prescriptions?
That probably would not have hurt.
I'm just saying.
So the GoodRx brought it from $300 down to like $255.
That's still too high. I would be like, no, thank you. I love you, kitten, but I'm gonna watch you suffocate.
Hold on, exactly. You know, so I'm like, okay. And she goes, well, and also I have a number of clients. She's like, I can't really truly recommend it, but I do have some clients who get it through a Canadian pharmacy. And I'm like, done. Because you know that that stuff is real, and
but
you know
not
that stuff.
Canadian.
Doesn't matter. They
go
will
go to
sell.
Mexico.
Summer, I'm not Mexican. What are you talking about?
I'm just saying.
You can't use one reason for not and then use it, tell me the other one. So I'm looking into a Canadian pharmacy. I do my research, and no joke, it is as low as $45. No, $40.
This makes me so angry.
Girl, that's a whole other topic for a whole other time,
no.
But I hear you.
This is already too long, but I'm...
Okay. So I'm like, okay, $45 plus $10 shipping, done. And I place the order almost, and then I go like do a live chat, and they take care of everything for me. I can talk about the how I did it later on or not, but then he mentioned something about the time, and I went back and I read it, and I was like, oh, so wait, you're telling me if I order this at the cheapest price at $45 or whatever it was, plus shipping, that it's going to take 4 to 8 weeks? What the heck? Like, my cat's suffering till then, whatever. His number's all, yeah.
Welcome to the U.S. Postal Service.
Well, hold on. Yes, but this is not U.S. Postal Service.
It doesn't matter. It's going to interact with it eventually.
It will, but there's a different reason. So I read the, not fine
Customs?
Print, but the smaller thing, potentially. So basically, even though it's a Canadian pharmacy, right? You have multiple options for purchase for every drug. So this is all the same drug. If you get it straight from a Canadian pharmacy, meaning it's produced in Canada, the dispensary's in Canada, you pay a little bit more, but not $300. You pay a little bit more than the low, which is $40. And if it comes from Canada, the country, it takes 2 to 4 weeks. Okay. But because I was kind of cheaping out thinking, hey, why not go $45? It would have come from someplace. It would have come from their dispensary in Turkey. So it was the same medication. It's cheaper. And normally if you can buy like, you know, buy ahead or buy multiple packs or whatever, I wouldn't mind, but it's not me. It's my baby girl. And 2 months is wow. So I'm like, okay, can we change this from the cheap one to the almost as cheap one? So instead of 45, I spent at like 75, which is still not 300. So yeah, so I'm still waiting for it. It's been about a week, and I'll let you know when it comes. But meanwhile,
I feel like we discussed stretching this episode, but I didn't anticipate it being about this.
There you go. You're welcome. Okay, last part. So you're like, okay, I got the drugs. Well, there's 2 parts to this whole thing. It's not just the drugs.
You're a liar. Cannot... There's like been 6 parts to this.
No. I mean, to this drug. You can't take an inhaler for a human mouth and put it onto a cat or up to a cat, into a cat, anything.
Are you going to nebulizer?
There is... And you can Google it. I'll include a link in the show notes. There is something. And that you can't even use the same one as a freaking dog. There is one for just for cats. It is that specialized. It's called AeroCat. AeroCat.
Is it a nebulizer?
The nebulizer is...
It's like a tent you put over some sort of a crate so that they have to breathe the air?
It's the equivalent of that. So it has three components. It's basically made... It's like a long cylindrical chamber.
The first component is fear. Because they don't know what's happening and they're in a tent and they're breathing weird air.
It's not a tent, but it's, I don't know, maybe worse. So you have the main chamber.
Worse than a tent? Okay, well, go. Tell me.
There's a cylindrical chamber. At one end of the chamber is where you insert the inhaler once you get it. On the other end of the chamber, you twist on, apply, whatever, this silicone mask. So you have to hold this mask.
Nope. You need to get a tent. You need a tent or a plastic bag to put around.
No, because too much gets lost.
I'm being completely honest with you. It's the same thing I said to my boyfriend when my cat got out into the woods when I was not there. When he asked me if the cat should have a bath. And I said, no. I value you.
So... Allow me to wrap this up. The now, I won't say silver lining, but I guess you could say the only benefit in having to wait for that drug to get here, and I had to order the mask is not prescription. You can order that on Amazon. So I ordered the mask. It came last week.
Well, here's the thing. If they had delivered the medicine before you could adequately administer it, what's the point? So I get what you're saying. I am just saying that I pay for Amazon Prime, which when they signed me up was for 2-day shipping, and now that doesn't exist anymore, and I'm still paying the same amount. So
I know. And we're all experiencing that. So anyway, the only benefit, or I should say one of the benefits of having that mask but not having the actual medicine, and the pieces come apart, the mask goes on and off of the cylinder. What I am doing is I'm taking this time between actually getting the mask and not having the meds. I am grooming her, and not with a comb.
Don't say that, because when you say grooming her, it sounds like you're trying to have sex with her. That being said, you're trying to save her face. Okay, so here's what I'm going to say.
Save her face?
Her lungs, whatever. You want to save her and her face and her body.
I am slowly introducing her to this mask. That's all.
What I am saying is that now that you have dedicated 20 minutes to telling me about your cat's asthma, there now needs to be pictures of your cat wearing whatever you just purchased. And if you need to blur her eyes out because that's the thing that makes her monkey bee, then I need it, because you can't dedicate this much time to talking about your cat's asthma and the mask and the Canadian medicine you bought without also providing a picture of said cat being medicated. There it is. Medicated. Yeah. I wanted to say medicinized, but that's not a word. So I had to pause and find medicated.
I can
go for me.
I can follow up in future once I have all the things. But my plan is between up until we get the meds, my plan is to, so far she has, I haven't put on her face yet. I'm doing it just little by little. I'm starting to put the mask next to her while she's just sitting.
Oh my
later
God.
On, put the cylinder next to her. And then,
why are you laughing?
Because I want you to know that when I bought a new cat carrier for my cat and I set it on the floor in the living room and let him play in it and be used to it being there, that's one thing. What you have purchased is a mask that needs to go on her face. And she will never like it, no matter how much try to get her used to it.
It's not a mask that you have to strap on. It's something you literally, it's all one piece. You just hold it up to her face. But yes.
That's better. She's not going to sit still for that. Come on.
She will.
Oh.
And you know what? If it doesn't work, guess what? We have a kitty burrito, don't we?
Oh my Jesus. I need a full video of this whole thing, because she's going to tear you to shreds with
her she's not.
10 fingers and toes of daggers that she's going to attack you with.
And now on to our read along. This week, we will be continuing our A Breath of Stone Ashes read-along, beginning with chapter 16, entitled
New Ginger.
Just try it once.
Nope.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I was very clear last week that I was going to say Lamont Just, and that's not right. So
no,
please,
it's not.
Continue.
Le mot juste.
Yeah, I was off, way off.
I can do 18, though, and 17.
Good.
Mia N. starts us out with mot juste, the exactly right word or phrasing, courtesy of Merriam-Webster. That's the definition. This short chapter, Mia begins, which opens part 3, is a perfectly concise gem of an example of Diana's writing. Pillow talk between our phrasers is always welcome. Flirty Jamie postcoital.
And precoital.
Flirty Jamie's postcoital mouth is met by Claire's equally smiling one. In this case, le mot juste is, I love you, I like you, I worship you, I have to have my cock inside you.
If I had $1 for every time, I'd have no money.
Me too. As usual, Jamie has many appropriate phrases for the occasion. Quote, it's lucky you're wed to a decrepit old man, Sassenach, or you'd be on your knees with your arse in the air this moment, unquote.
I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I love a decrepit old man just for that purpose.
Oh, goodness.
Because I'm tired, y'all. I got a lot going on. I'm tired.
Let's start the chapter. It is August 1773. We get a date reference.
I mean, it is August. It's August 220, and we're in the middle of quarantine.
That's true.
And I need the fires to go away.
These dates are helpful. These references are helpful because, as I said, we don't get much on the show.
We don't.
So I really appreciate them in the book.
So this is how, so all that just till now, up until the date reference, was all Mia N. So they banged and he's reveling in how good he was. And then I realized that he's just back from his trip as an Indian agent for the gang. Got it. She's recounting how
he gave her all of his pent up. I didn't get to have sex with the natives.
Potentially. It comes back. So let's not spoil that.
All right.
She's recounting how the barley harvest went. Grasshoppers abounded. They couldn't get rid of them. And then the grasshoppers headed toward the fields of barley.
That's not what happened.
That will never, ever happen again.
I hope not. Or,
but not you. Me singing? Sure as heck. Come on.
I mean,
but that phrasing will never happen again.
Well, of course they won't because she burned the fucking barley. That being said...
That's awful.
This scene kind of made it into the series,
but
in a completely different context and with completely different characters.
And they turned it from comedy into...
dramedy.
Saves, not even dramedy, but drama. Like Roger saves the day. Roger needed something to...
He needed something to make him important to the people there.
Correct.
Because his last skill was singing and it's gone.
Uh-huh.
Right? So if he can't do the thing he was skilled at...
That's before he was hanged some, wasn't it?
In the show. But I'm talking about in the book.
Oh,
he needed something.
That is why we keep them separate. I cannot keep up with what you're saying. Got it. In the book. Yes. It is after. Got it. 100%. Oh, wait. Stop it. Hold on a second. Okay, hold on. I got to do it because now I'm all kind of confuzzled. In the show, this happens to make Roger important, right? And he hasn't been hanged yet. Okay. In the book, it's for comedy. Or it is comedy. And it's also to show us the staunchness of the new tenants. Correct?
Correct.
Okay, so what else are you saying that I missed?
Huh?
What else were you trying to say that I just missed that I didn't include?
No, I was just saying that in the series, he needed something other than his voice to be helpful. And nobody trusted him. And the last time they trusted him, that people got, you know, taken captive in the series.
Yes.
In the series on the TV. And that's not here. But in here, if they had kept it for a later use, you know, like season mm-hmm. 6, it would have been a good opportunity to give Roger some gravitas. But in this case, it was Roger was there.
Roger was just returning with the tenants.
Right.
Yeah.
And the tenants were like, oh, my God, we're going to hell. And everything's on fire.
Only because I understand now what I was trying to get at earlier. So because of the way it was used in the show, and I agree, it was absolutely used to give him something else to do and not a power, but gravitas, you know, some importance. So why was it important? Or do you think it was setting, not that he was going to be the resident grasshopper killer or anything, but
I mean,
do you think they needed
the writers in the show? Were they not?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you think the writers wanted to him to have an opportunity of showing that he could help out in an important way outside of his voice? Because at this point, like I said, he hasn't been hanged yet. So his need necessarily wasn't there yet. Although, yes, he was pretty not really given a lot of stuff to do.
I feel like at
that point.
And this is just me projecting. I feel like, I believe that the writers want desperately to include as many Easter eggs for book readers as possible. And this was a way to include an Easter egg from the book or something straight from the book that readers would be like, oh, I remember this. That perhaps was not exactly how they remembered it, but they were hoping that it had been years since they'd last read that book. And it would just be like that tingling of a memory at the edge of the peripheral of their brain waves. To that, they would be just familiar enough with it that they go with it. And to give those two characters who they left on the ridge for this particular point in the storyline or the series to do. And up to this point, Roger's been making a lot of mistakes. And they had, if I'm not wrong, didn't they just send him home for doing
From
doing
the
bullshit?
Yeah, from Brownville.
Oh, that's right. They just sent him home. So he needed to do something to give himself some gravitas in the psyche of the Fraser's Ridge peeps. What are you doing in your free time? Playing Best Fiends, I hope. And if you're not playing Best Fiends yet, you should be. It's hours of fun you can enjoy anytime. I'm hooked. And if you're anything like me, you will be too. No Wi-Fi? No worries. You don't even need the internet connection to play.
I like that each level is unique enough to keep me interested, but also similar enough so that I'm not learning something new from scratch every time. And with over 100 million downloads, it means they're doing something right. And I'm finally in the 200s, Summer. I'm at level 225. Where are you?
You know, you say that and it makes me feel awful for you.
Why is it that?
Because I'm at level 763.
Oh my goodness.
And you know, I mentioned this earlier, but I personally am in an area with literally no good internet connection. So this game is a godsend for me when I get bored. Now, it may sound like I've been slowing down with like my gameplay, like I'm not having the achievements I have in the past, but to be honest, it's better because the levels are just getting more challenging and I can't resist a good side mission. It is hours of fun right at your fingertips. Don't miss out on this must-play game.
Best Fiends has thousands of levels already, and with new levels, events, and characters added every month, it's hours of fun right at your fingertips. You can even play offline.
With over 100 million downloads and tons of five-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play.
That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
So, in the book, back in the chapter, they're enjoying this post-coital chat, moist and post altogether.
She's recounting how the barley harvest went. As I said, there were lots of grasshoppers and they destroyed her garden basically. And then she couldn't get rid of them. They headed toward the fields of barley. Okay, I got it in twice. And they were chewing and destroying and chewing and destroying. And they're like, she was peeved, like she was upset, not just because of what they had done. Well, she says later it was because of what they had done to her garden, but she realized that if they didn't stop them, they could have destroyed most of the food crops that the ridge depended on, or the tenants depended on.
I hope they didn't have plans for that barley though, because it's gone, y'all.
You mean the fields of barley?
I wasn't going
to
do that.
You're giving it to you were, but you were giving it to me. I'm telling you. Oh, you weren't giving it to me.
I have never.
We're sisters.
I have never given it to you, ever.
Sisters.
I'm not even going to give you that. I'm not even going to give you that. I'm giving you nothing.
I didn't say you did. It's me. I never ask you to do it because I know you won't. So what do they do? She's like, we got to torch the fields. There were so many other fields at risk. It was best to sacrifice the one. But the best part, well, the best part is all of it. But when she is recounting to Jamie how she just goes up to Murdo Lindsay and says, yeah, we're going to torture fields. He's like, okay. He doesn't even like react. And she says he's slow, mm-hmm. I think. So they go to, she had made the decision.
So this whole scene was Claire saying, I burned all the barley you left for me.
Don't even say it for me. You left me. That's a good. Say you're better. Doing it. I love it. You got to do it better. With me now. I don't care if it fits better, then do it. Look, show me up.
Look, y'all, I've been watching Freestyle Love Supreme special on Hulu this morning, so I'm very deeply feeling Freestyle
Hamilton?
And Love oh. and Supreme. And also Lin-Manuel Miranda. Hmm. A little bit of Chris Jackson and some James Iglehart for real. And if you haven't seen it yet, it's on Hulu. They haven't paid me.
It's called
Please
Freestyling.
Watch it. Freestyle Love Supreme. It's We Are Freestyle Love Supreme on Hulu.
It's not, they don't sing Hamilton though.
There are some Hamilton scenes and there are some In the Heights scenes, but it's mostly Freestyle Love Supreme scenes. But if you loved Hamilton, if you loved In the Heights, you would love seeing this because this is 100% kind of where both of those things grew from. So. Nobody paid me. I wish they had, but you'll love it.
So Murdo Lindsay's field had been eaten, and then they torched it. And how did they torch it? Well, they
fire,
kind of like they showed us in the show. Well, Summer.
How else do you torch
things? They showed us in the show. They had the burning word I'm not going to say. And they took them around. They surrounded the field and then started throwing them inside. So they so it had a limit. They placed limits on it so it didn't grow out of that field, past that field. And then they, of course, torched everything, went up in the middle of the field. And Brianna, Lizzie, Marsali, and Mrs. Bug and Claire were doing this. And in one of the best imaginary, well, it's fiction, so it's imaginary, but an imaginary or maybe imagery, but in someone remembering something, someone imagining something, meaning Claire was imagining this as she was retelling it to Jamie. In one of the book's best imaginary recollections, we had this image of the very Protestant, very anti-papist Scottish settlers coming just over the rise, the new tenants. And the women are all barefoot, in their shifts, curtled up, so their legs are showing, and covered in soot. And they're, it looks like they're dancing around a bonfire.
As you do.
It's pretty perfect. Pretty perfect. So the new tenants were welcomed and fed and given a place to sleep. Some were housed in the big house with Claire, with Jamie was still gone. And then that night, Claire couldn't sleep. So she goes downstairs and she finds a group of them praying in the kitchen.
What do you do when you can't sleep?
Ginger,
what do you do when you can't sleep?
Oh, what do
sleep?
I do? I thought you said as you do. What do I do?
Yeah.
Put on more of Davina and put on a sleep timer and then yeah. I'll turn over.
Claire didn't have that option. The only option was to get that F out of bed.
I was about to tell you what Claire did.
I know, but I've had those nights where like I'm laying in bed. I can't sleep. I've tried everything else. And the only thing left is to just
Get up.
You surrender to it. You're like, I guess I'm just done right now. I'll sleep again later. But right now, I'm done. I got to go do some other things.
I used all the sleep that you gave me.
You don't. My whole point is you just have to move on with your life and the sleep will come to you eventually. But you have to be willing to let it go. Because if you pay too much attention to needing to sleep, never going to get it.
Yeah.
Never gonna get it.
If we had planned it, we could have done, we could not do it in both. So that, see, if we, because we've never done that before.
We don't plan it. Y'all, this, if nothing tells you, this is never planned.
That was off. Yeah. She was not off. We were both fine, but, well, I wasn't fine.
This is just 100% how our brains work.
Sure. I'm just happy that Summer's finally joining me after 7 years.
Well,
This episode.
I have a lot of other stuff going on in my life right now, so maybe I've just let some stuff go.
I think we all have a few things going on in our life right now. So she's down there because she didn't expect them to be awake. So she went down in her shift, and which is 18th century underwear, right?
Which is super inappropriate for meeting new people.
And she didn't have her hair covered, but she's like, but it was plaited. It was braided. It was fine.
Keep naming all the reasons it's inappropriate, Ginger. She had her hair down. She wasn't wearing a dress. She was in her underwear. Like literally all the things you're mentioning are significantly worse as you go.
Okay. So now it's his turn. She asks him, how did it go with the turkey? He's like, it was fine. That's all he says. And don't worry, we get more later. But that's all he says. And then he turns around and he's like, okay, you sassenach, I need my hole. And they do it again.
Wow. He did not call her a hole. I'm going to need you to retract that statement and pretend like you never said it.
Mia N. closes us out with, Diana thoroughly ensures that we feel the lust, amusement, and comfort these two share with each other using her vivid descriptors. Quote, he smelled delectably of road dust and dried sweat and the deep musk of a man who has just enjoyed himself thoroughly. The seduction of Claire and us continues throughout her narrative of how the badass women of Fraser's Ridge handled an infestation of grasshoppers by torching the field and burning them alive. She tells us of how the new tenants got to see them, quote, dancing round barefoot with our shifts curdled up, hooting like gibbons and covered with soot. Her story leads to mutual laughter.
That's so
laughter.
Specific, because she could have just said monkeys.
That's
or
funny.
Or primates, and she chose gibbons. So if you want to know what hooting gibbons sound like, you should Google that, because that is 100% what Diana meant. Hooting gibbons.
Jamie imagines how she had looked appearing before these faithful people in her see-through shift without a nightcap as he, quote, pushes his fingers up into the wild mass of her hair, unquote.
I got really concerned because I didn't recall
me
that
too.
Statement. And I was like, where are you going with this? Where is he pushing his fingers?
I don't read this before we go on. Oh, so I was wondering like, whoa. She continues her story as he nibbles gently at her ear. The tale is brought abruptly short with, I like you fine, Sassenach, and closes with, on your knees, Aenean, now.
But I'm positive he didn't say it like that, because if somebody said that to me in bed, I'd be like, meh, we're done. And now, moving on to chapter 17, entitled, I can read this one, entitled, The Limits of Power.
It's another letter chapter. Thinking we might get lots of these in season 6.
We're going to have to, because Lord Jon is gone, y'all.
Well, hold on. Depending on how they play things, since as it stands now, we won't have Lord Jon physically in the season, but they didn't say we wouldn't have his voice. Also, in this book, at least in this chapter, most of his chapter, all of this chapter, excuse me, but I think all of this book.
Think how much cheaper it would be to just have Jamie read them out loud. He's a producer. They don't have to... Like, it's not extra. True. They don't have to.
Well, this one, Jamie would, because it's to Lord Jon.
Oh, yeah.
But in general, like, we have a lot of letters, right? In this book.
I mean, it's the 1700s. If you weren't on Fraser's Ridge, it was letters. That's the only way you contacted each other, because no one's going to travel 6 hours or more
a few weeks.
I came to tell you of this thing.
Hey,
ooh,
I do.
Yay!
Okay. Ooh. See, you jumped in. I'm so happy.
I was done. I reached my limit of that conversation. Go ahead. Next.
So basically, what I'm saying is in season 5, they shipped Lord Jon off to London.
I always ship Lord
Jon. It doesn't mean we won't have letters. Matter of fact, the only thing we could have is letters, at least season 6. At least that's what we have right now, right? Because we have no information on season 6. But in the book, he's still in Virginia. So they have more frequent letters. In the show now, at least they've set themselves up for Lord Jon is leaving. He took Ulysses with him and he's going off to London. The letter is dated August 14th, which is almost, it's just about
we
a week
just
ago.
We just passed it.
1773. It's from Jaime to Lord Jon. He is letting Lord Jon know of his new role as Indian agent to the crown. We also get Jaime's opinion of the committees of safety. He's not a huge fan, but sees their appeal. People are so remotely situated. The nearest courthouse is 3 days away. There's unrest following the war of regulation.
I preferred regulators.
The governor and council are in constant conflict with the assembly. The circuit court has effectively ceased to exist. Judges are no longer being appointed. There's no sheriff in Surrey County, and those sheriffs who do exist are corrupt. There are house burnings, assaults, and loads of other nasty stuff. Of course people would turn to a local committee of safety if that's all they got.
Yeah, but it's the Browns, and I fucking hate the Browns.
We're not talking about Browns yet, but just the fact, Jamie doesn't like committees of safety in general, but he's saying he understands, and Diana is telling us why, you know, a little historical background on why people would turn to them, why they would exist.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I get it. If you were living in a small town and you don't trust large government and you don't trust the larger government agencies that quote unquote promise to provide you protection, if you don't trust them, you would more be apt to trust somebody on the ground
that
lives
there
who cares about your community.
Yeah.
But the Browns don't care about their community. They care about themselves.
Well, they care about Brownsville, but that's
exactly
about it.
And if you're not in Brownsville, and that's how they feel. And I feel like we're all being, and Claire will be, unduly judged for not being from Brownsville or the 1700s.
And Diana, through Jamie, tells us some very important stuff about the Browns. Remember, at this point in the book, there hasn't been any big bad thing that has happened from the Browns yet. So pre-TV show, we don't know what the Browns are capable of. Jamie is telling Lord Jon, who is still in Virginia, that he felt he had no other choice than to become an Indian agent because MacDonald would have approached the Browns, whom he sees as not so great, Again, this is before anything happens from the Browns, right? In the book. So he's, Diana, through Jamie, is giving us all this like foreshadowing from the Browns. He says, if Brown were to become an agent to the Crown, along with his already being in charge of the Beardsley's trading post, quote, Brown's stature in this unsettled region might shortly become so great that no man could easily oppose him in any venture. And that, I think, is dangerous.
Also, I think it's unfair, and I'm saying this to myself, to judge Richard Brown on Lionel Brown's choices. However, that being said,
Lionel Brown hasn't made any choices yet.
Not yet. I know he hasn't, but I'm just saying I feel so strongly about all the Browns because of Lionel Brown. But him choosing family over right makes me also dislike Richard Brown. And I know it hasn't happened in the book yet, but it absolutely has happened in the series.
So Jamie already has an inkling about the Browns. Also, Jamie knows how power can corrupt. And since he's been through a few things and has been on the side of those having less or no power, he judges himself a better leader, or at least a candidate, better candidate for such an important role. I would tend to agree. Mm. He's also worried about being away from home a lot, something that his being an agent will require. And Jamie doesn't want to start his own committee. It would be, quote, tantamount to declaring open war with the Browns, unquote. That wouldn't be smart, especially if he has to be away from home so much. He believes by taking this appointment, it would not only extend his own influence, but perhaps curtail some of the Browns' ambitions.
Well, also, that's true. But I think, and even though they don't express it here, it's almost like, if I'm doing this, I don't have time to be part of the Committee of Safety. So I don't have
it's
to
almost
commit.
Like it's also a convenient excuse. Yeah.
Right. So I don't have to commit to being a part of that and whatever bullshit they get involved with. I'm too busy being the Indian agent that I'm not allowing you to be because I don't trust you.
Mia N. writes, the entirety of this short chapter is devoted to Jamie writing a letter to his favorite pen pal, Lord John Grey.
He's my favorite
Jamie
pen pal, too.
Jamie informs John of his new office, quote, that of Indian agent to the Crown, and how it came to be. We get a strong sense of Jamie's dislike and mistrust of the Browns and their so-called Committee of Safety. There is much foreshadowing here with a person of sense deploring these committees, their impending threat. Quote, frequent reports of house burnings, assaults, and similar alarums, random attacks, and vigilantism.
I'm sorry, did you just say alarums?
That's how she quoted it. Yes, it's from the chapter.
Is that not alarms?
From the letter. It's from the letter.
Did he spell alarms weird?
He spelled alarums.
Okay. I don't ever read those words like that in my head. I never say them out loud, so I'm moderately amused.
Jamie goes on to express further his concern that the Browns may become dangerous. He alludes to Roger's observation that, quote, a man's sense of morality tends to decrease as his power increases. And I suspect that the brothers Brown possess little of the former to begin with, unquote. So Jamie will next visit the Cherokee in the fall. And he asks Lord John if he has anything that he could help
him with. It's the beautiful time of the year to visit anybody in the Smokies and Blue Ridge Mountains. That's when I would go.
Mia N. writes, Jamie also updates Lord John on the new settlers and how the White Sow has taken up residence beneath the big house. And then he mentions Tom Christie, whom Lord John knows from Arsmuir. As for the new tenants and Claire, she's the Witch of Endor. Her surgery scares them. And not just what's in there, but and what makes it worse is that the Cherokee come in, you know, when they're there to trade and there to see them, they're walking around in whatever they bring, in whatever they wear, and trading whatever they trade. And yeah, it's just a lot.
Is it wrong that when you say Endor, I think of Star Wars? It's Ewoks. It's like legit Ewoks for me. Every time they're like, the Witch of Endor. And I was like, wait.
And when I hear Endor or Witch of Endor, I think of The Wizard of Oz. I cannot tell you why. It's just what I thought of.
Wicked Witch of the West, Wicked Witch of the East. I get all that.
Yeah, but Endor, when I hear the word witch, I don't think of that movie. But Witch of Endor, yes. I can't tell you why, but whatever. Yeah. So I'm like, let's look up Witch of Endor and see what the heck.
So I will link to, in the show notes, to the Wikipedia article. Basically, the Witch of Endor. In the Hebrew Bible, the Witch of Endor is a woman Saul consulted to summon the spirit of Prophet Samuel in the 28th chapter of the first book of Samuel in order to receive advice against the Philistines in battle after his prior attempts to consult God through sacred lots and prophets had failed. The witch is absent from the version of that event recounted in the Deuterocanonical book of Sirach. Later Christian theology found trouble with this passage as it appeared to imply that the witch had summoned the spirit of Samuel and therefore necromancy and magic were possible. Huh. Interesting. So that's the Witch of Endor. It's completely biblical. I knew it wasn't the Wizard of Oz. Couldn't have been because it wasn't. It was Jamie referencing it. So there you go. Mia N. writes, Jamie continues to convey his plans to visit the Cherokee again in the autumn. He tells John of the growth of the population of Fraser's Ridge and amusingly regales how the white sow, who now lives under the house, quote, there engages in such debauches that our dinner is disturbed daily by hellish noises resembling the sounds of souls in torment, unquote. And he tells of the newcomers who are stern sons of the covenant and to whom even Roger McKenzie.
Like sons of a bitch, what? Sons of bitches. Sons of the covenant.
And to whom Roger McKenzie is, quote, a sadly depraved libertine by their lights, unquote. Their opinion of Claire, however, makes one think she may be the great whore of Babylon. How many
she should
times?
Be so lucky.
Mia writes.
She's not that famous, y'all.
Mia writes, how many times has Claire been called a whore by now? Like, a lot.
I mean, at this point,
don't
it should be a point
because
of pride.
We still have two books.
Point
so
of pride, people. Point of pride.
He also includes, Jamie includes in this letter, a shopping list from Claire. And Bree thanks him for the romantical, he thanks him on Bree's behalf for the romantical gift of phosphorus. And he closes, and then he has a P.S. Stephen Bonnet is around, yo. If you hear anything, please tell me. Peace out.
Peace out.
Mia N. closes us out with, after thanking John for sending many wonderful gifts, as always, Jamie signs his letter, then gets to the crux of the matter in the postscriptum. Jamie wants John to continue to keep a lookout for the evasive and looming presence of one Stephen Bonnet.
Dude, they killed him in season 5. He's fine. And to finish off this week with chapter 18 entitled, Ginger, I Don't Need You, Vroom.
From Bree's dream book. You know, the one Roger broke into?
I feel like this is just... It feels like a device. A device to allow... I know, but it's a device to allow Bree to have first person.
Because
the only first person in the entire series who has first person, the only person to have first person is Claire. So every other time that you have a moment in the series when it's from another person's point of view, it's always third person.
Unless it's
except
in writing.
For the dream journal.
Or letter.
Or a letter, which is the same as a letter, really, when you think about it. It's a letter to one's higher self as opposed to a letter to an individual. But it's the same thing. It's a letter. And this is, it feels to me like a device to get inside of Brianna.
Of course. This is the water dream or a water dream. Water foreshadowing, maybe
this was so. This sorcerer's percent, sorcerer's
apprentice.
Thank you. I wanted to start with a P and it was not the right word. Apprentice. Thank you. That's it.
Normally, and this is, I am summarizing obviously what Bree wrote. Normally, when Bree dreams of water, it's because she says it's because she drank too much. Do you find that the case for yourself? Do you have specific dreams when you know you're gonna have to wake up?
Oh, I always drink too much.
Seriously, I mean water.
No.
Okay, you just wake up.
But I do have a lot. I have in my lifetime had a lot of dreams about needing to pee.
Oh.
And or being really thirsty.
Huh.
And in the dream, I'm thirsty and I keep drinking and it doesn't help. So I'm constantly looking for water. So I know that when I'm thirsty and perhaps dehydrated, it definitely gets into my dreams.
That's funny.
I don't have dreams about peeing or needing to pee too much because I try not to drink too much before bed. But I do know that the times when I do, I have to get up immediately and pee or else I will wet my bed.
In this dream, though, water was coming out of the faucet from the sink. There was Claire and they were doing dishes together. She described some lovely things that Claire and Frank had that we hadn't known about before. Namely, dishes, some goblets, crystal goblets, I think, and just things from Claire and Frank's ancestors, their family. The water got higher and higher, but no one was worried. When she woke, she heated water.
In her defense, though, if I had that dream and the water were like Sorcerer's Apprentice cold, I would have woken up way faster.
That's true.
But if it was
warm water,
if it was Bree Dream Journal warm, I would have kept sleeping because it's not jarring like cold water.
So when she woke, she did heat the water for their own use for the basin. She wonders about such dreams from then, meaning her past future. She wonders why they're more vivid than when she dreams about things from now. And then she wonders about new inventions. How many are made by people like her, meaning time travelers? How many inventions are memories of things we once knew?
And that seems unfair. I feel like that seems unfair to the actual trailblazers and the people who literally came up with the ideas long before time travelers. Do you see why I'm saying that? Somebody had to have the idea originally for it to be in her timeline.
Yes.
So if you're creating the circle, then for her to go back and create it, it means that somebody else actually created it at that time or sometime in between when she went back and her present.
So she's just curious about this. And she's also wondering how many, as has happened before, how many people are out there like her? Back to life, back to reality. They're discussing how to have hot running water, how to bring it to the cabin. They don't have enough metal for pipes, so it would have to be sluices, she says. Meanwhile, Roger is whittling. And we learn through their chat that she's almost done developing the matches, but she has had to sacrifice her eyebrows in the process.
As you do.
Roger is making a wee bobby for Jem. It has wheels that turn independently, and he shows, or at least they turn the two together, if not independently. And he shows Jemmy how the thing works, and he says, vroom, vroom. Now so not just potentially running water, but now a car, is these ideas from people like them. So when Jem asks what it is, she hesitates and says, mm-hmm. I guess it's a vroom, honey.
Vroom, vroom. Or I'm sorry, broom. Broom, broom. Broom.
And then more from the dream book. Bree is journaling her thought process of how to procure hot running water. She says, we really do need metal, but we don't have enough. And then, quote, I'll have to dream up something else, unquote.
She's a very effective dreamer, but I feel like that needs to go and be credited to Diana Gabaldon for allowing her to dream of such fantastical things. I don't know if I would dream of those things if I were in the past, mostly because A, I'm not an engineer of any shape or form. And I also, while I love warm water, I understand how fire works and I would just heat it. So I don't ever, I am not a scientific enough mind to think about how to make things better, just how to make things work. And I will say that based upon my time living in the wilderness of Northern California with sketchy plumbing. I personally am never thinking 2 months ahead. I'm thinking of right now. How do I make this work right now? We'll figure out later, but right now, how do I make it work? So that is a credit to Diana Gabaldon and her character work to give her characters that kind of foresight and thought and gravitas. Because I personally, as an not normal. I won't say normal. I'm not normal. But as a current inhabitant of the 2020s, that is not part of my internal vernacular. And that was chapter 18. Join us next time when we will be discussing chapter 19. Only one, y'all, because it's 14 pages long, entitled, I Don't Need You, Ginger, Making Hay.
And again, if you're sad during the week and you miss us, please join our community at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you want to wear my art on your face, please go to www.outlanderpod.com/shop. And you can wear it on your face, on your body. You can wear it on your phone. If you have ever loved our artwork, there is a place to get an item with it on there.
And if there's something that you see other sites, I don't even mean podcast sites, but other other sites like the shop site, TeePublic, if there are items you see that are available there or other places of fan art for some kind of thing that you would like to see our art on, just let us know and we will look into it. And again, a special thanks to our co-producer, Linda B. And real quick, if you want to find out more about what a co-producer is and how you can become one, you can find out more at patreon.com/outlanderpod. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlanderPod.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.